You're listening to Let's Talk, episode 11. Howdy all, Father Corey Stika here. Welcome to our weekly episode of Let's Talk, a podcast where we talk with the members of our SQPN community. We talk about issues that are of interest to our SQPN community. Today we've got a couple of panelists. We don't have a special guest, but that's all right because we've got a couple of good panelists. First of all, we've got Lisa Hendy coming to us from California. How you doing, Lisa?
Awesome, Father Corey. Great to be with you.
Well, glad to have you. And then we also have Joanne Mercier from Rhode Island. How are you doing, Joanne?
Fine, Father Corey. Hi, Lisa. How y'all doing?
I had to remember there for a second.
We seem to have the country covered here. We got like both of the poles and the center.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
Exactly. You know, and it kind of works out well that way. I had to think for a second there, Joanne, where you were at. I knew you were over there on the East Coast. I just couldn't remember exactly where.
Somewhere. New England, yes.
So, well, Joanne, why don't you know, since you know we've revamped Let's Talk, this is your first time being on it, why don't you introduce yourself?
Oh, gee. Okay. I am a wife, musician, liturgist, podcaster, pastoral associate, genealogist, chief cook and bottle washer, and everything else you can throw in between. I am actually pastor associate for a large collaborative in the Archdiocese of Boston, known as the Cranberry Catholic Collaborative of three parishes in Middleborough, Lakeville, and Rochester. And I'm also a podcaster. Every once in a while, I show up on my podcast, Monday Morning Catholic, which has been on hiatus because, as you all know who work in the church, it's very difficult to get anybody together to do these things. Sometimes it's like herding cats. But I'm also on the SQPN board, and it's really a pleasure to be actually on since I've been behind the scenes. And I tend to be the Martha of a lot of places. And with her feast day tomorrow on the 29th, it's kind of apropos you have me on this weekend.
Well, that works out well. And, you know, of course, I'm on the board with Joanne as the chaplain as well. So I've worked with her for a couple of years in that role as well. Now, Lisa, how about you? You know, you're very prolific, but just in case someone hasn't heard of you, why don't you give a little introduction?
I'm just at the beach. No, yeah. I'm Lisa. I'm a wife to Greg and a mom to, and now a mother-in-law. That's awesome too.
Congrats.
And I'm a longtime SQPN groupie. So I think I was a groupie of SQPN from the get-go, and have been blessed to have a couple of iterations of a podcast that's now called Lisa Hendy and Friends, which is basically a weekly chat with whoever will hang out with me. And it's been really fun to get back to podcasting. I write and I go to the beach a lot. So. I live down in Los Angeles.
And you're very, very modest. You don't just write. You've got quite a few books under your belt, including
there's there's always a few in my brain too,
including the excellent Chime Traveler series that I've really read a couple of those. I even was able to review one of them, and excellent series.
Thanks, Father Corey. They're fun.
Yeah. So, just quick introduction for myself for those who might not listen to last week's episode. I'm Father Corey Stika. I am a priest of the Diocese of Great Falls Billings. I'm pastor in a small town of Malta, Montana. Unfortunately, it's not nice and sunny and lots of beaches like the island of Malta and middle of winter. I wish I was in the island of Malta. I've got a couple of small mission parishes, Dodson and Saco, Montana, and then also an Indian reservation that I assist at as pastor, but I have a priest out there who does most of the work out there. And as I said, I'm also on the SQPN board as chaplain. So, this week, we marked an anniversary, a 50th anniversary of a very contentious document, shall we say. It's kind of funny where people think that Pope Francis was the first pope, it seems like at least, the first pope to really do anything that might be considered contentious or controversial. However, 50 years ago, a document came out that I think really surprised people, but I think also took a lot of flack, not well-deserved. It's actually it's an excellent document. I've read it a couple of times now. I know we kind of read it in preparation for this recording. The document I'm talking about is Humanae Vitae, written by or promulgated by Paul VI in 1968, July 25th, 1968. Humanae Vitae is best known as the birth control document. I think that's what everybody knows it as. And of course, that's what it was written to address, the issue of artificial birth control, especially the pill, which was a new invention at the time. But there's much more to it, because it really goes into the importance of the relationship between a husband and wife. We'll talk a bit about it. Now, Lisa and Joanne, you all, like I said, you read it as well as preparation for this. What are your impressions of it, reading either for the first time or reading it again? I know, Joanne, you said you've read it before. Why don't you say, Joanne, what you think of the document, just kind of your impressions of it?
Well, I think I read it back in grad school way a long time ago. And I think it has been a document that's kind of been in the forefront of my married life for the last 36 years in one way, in one shape or another. And what I find interesting about the document, because I've read a lot of them, this one seems to be almost all encompassing, where it takes the time to speak to the different groups that mm-hmm. it actually affects. It's not just, you know, the couple, but it's also, you know, the doctors and the priests and the, you know, and everybody else who, it was like the public officials, and that everybody is part of this, that everybody is charged to take care of life. And that, and this again is also the springboard to John Paul II's Theology of the Body. So for a little document, it has done a lot in 50 years. And I think it's been maligned in a lot of places. And I think when I was younger, yeah, to me, it wasn't as, you know, to me, it was a no. But as we, mm-hmm. as I looked at it through the years, it became more of a yes and a very affirming part of life, you know, bringing life and taking care of life, that it's all of our responsibilities and not just, you know, not just the couple who is trying to have a child or not have a child.
Right, right. How about you, Lisa? What did you think? Now, had you read the document before this week?
I hadn't. And to be honest, I haven't read it like in full. Mm-hmm. I did a review of it. But so I'm speaking from that position and trying to understand some of the primary teachings of the document. And I'll say one of my first reactions was, thank goodness that this wasn't written right now in the age of the blogosphere and Twitter, because can you just imagine? Although this 50th anniversary gives us an opportunity to revisit the primary teachings of the document and to say for ourselves how we affirm as Catholics what this document teaches, what the timeless truths that the church continues to teach, and also to, you know, just really frankly to pray for families, for women, for those who basically strive to be true to those teachings, but who deal with the realities of family life at the same time, or as I've seen around the world, the realities of poverty in different countries. You know, I always try to look at it from the vantage point of not just what I see in the church here in LA, but in places like Africa and South America and Asia, where I've had the chance to visit, you know, parishes and understand the context of their reality. So that's it. That's where I am.
One thing Joanne mentioned is that it's a short document, and it very much is. It's only 31 paragraphs, which, believe me, you know, I wish more papal documents today were only 31 paragraphs instead of, you know, 1,000 or whatever they end up being anymore. And it's a very clear document. That was one thing, you know, that surprised me when I first read it 20 years ago. How clear it is, you know, it lays out its case. It's not just saying no. It is saying, you know, this, the church does not allow this because this is not, frankly, because it's not good. You know, I mean, to put it simply, you know, I mean, that there's the whole summary. It's the church doesn't allow it because it's bad. No, it really but lays out.
It played itself out too.
Yeah.
As you know, 50 years later, we now see what was projected.
Absolutely.
If we do not follow this type of thing.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one thing, you know, we'll definitely touch on here in a couple of minutes is, what is the consequences of Humani Vitae, of not listening to Humani Vitae? And as I said, when it came out, it was a very controversial document. Humani Vitae came out of a commission that was set up originally by Pope John the 23rd and continued by Paul the 6th to look at these new birth control technologies, namely the pill. The pill was brand new at the time. I think that I was reading the pill came out in 1960. The first version of the birth control pill came out in 1960. So the church was actually on top of it. That was kind of impressive. to look at, you know, what are the moral and ethical consequences of the pill, of birth control? And not just the pill, but all artificial means of birth control. So this commission was originally set up kind of a smaller group. Paul VI expanded it to make it a much larger group. It was married couples. It was theologians. It was priests. It was bishops. It was a doctor's wide variety of people were on this commission. And their final results of the commission, there was a majority and a minority report, kind of like, like a Supreme Court where you've got the agreeing and the disagreeing reports. And one of the reports leaked that basically made it sound like the Pope was going to allow artificial means of birth control. And then the document came out. Then Humani Vitae came out. And it didn't. It said the opposite. It said that, you know, that it should be avoided. And pretty much immediately, of course, this is admittedly history to me. This was before my time, admittedly. But I've seen the results of it in the church. There was a large number of priests and bishops and theologians and professors who basically said, we're not going to accept it. We're not going to teach it. We're not going to follow it. They gathered in groups to sign documents basically saying, Humani Vitae is a dead letter. And so I've as a priest, I've talked with people that were told by their pastor, oh, it's fine to use the birth control pill. It's fine to use a condom. You know, as long as you're within marriage, it's fine. And of course, that's not what Humani Vitae says. You know, so it's a document that was pretty much rejected by a large number of people, unfortunately. I don't know if either of you have seen some of that happen, whether in your churches, your diocese, whatever it might be.
I don't know if I'd call it outright rejection, but I'll just share like my personal experience of having grown up, you know, in Catholic schools, pretty much first grade through graduating from the University of Notre Dame. And those words, like the name of the document was never. Mm-hmm. So putting it into context, I was born in 1963. So I'm a Vatican II kiddo. And I don't think that, with the exception of my senior year of high school theology class, and then of course obviously when I got to Notre Dame, this wasn't something that was like openly taught to us in that way. We talked as a family about, you know, living a chaste life and what our parents would hope for us and, you know, being married and discerning our vocation or whatever. But that phrase, Humani Vitae, I don't think like I ever knew those words until well beyond then. So it wasn't something that my Catholic high school, you know, pulled out the document and said, because the Pope wrote this document, this is what we teach. You know, it's more organic.
Right.
So
yeah, I was born in 1959, so this was coming out as I was a teenager, and it believe me, we were never taught about it in high school, and unfortunately, it wasn't something that was ever talked about. I come from an ethnic background, parish wise. I mean, Portuguese, and that was never discussed from the pulpit either. So when I ended up having some, and I'll be very honest here, having some gynecological issues, I was encouraged mm-hmm. to go on it, fix the issues,
right.
not knowing what the ramifications were down the road.
Sure.
And then when I started looking into it, I was like, whoa, wait a minute.
Right.
What am I doing here?
Right.
So, but again, it was that time where the church was changing and society was changing at the same time, and they were at odds.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you got the information when you were growing up and sometimes you didn't. So a lot of people made decisions that were not totally informed. Now, I don't think you have that issue, especially with social media mm-hmm. and technology, but then it was a different time. So I think I want to defend the gentleman priests and say, you know, a lot of them didn't want to get involved in get in the middle of it because right. they weren't sure. That's about as much as I can remember from back then.
Right. Yeah. And to be fair, that there were probably, I know there were many of my brother priests who themselves either had never seen the document. That's one thing to remember. You know, it's funny. And you know, I grew up again in the late 70s, early 80s. So I was still, you know, pre-internet child, but we didn't have the internet back then. Documents were literally printed in, you know, Suratori Romano. They were published in books. They were, you know, good old snail mail methods of shipping them around. And if the document didn't get to the priest would never read it. It's not like he could have gone, you know, like I did here, google.com, you know, give me humane vitae. Couldn't do that back then. So many priests probably had heard of it, but really didn't know anything about it. I mean, that's fair too, but it's both, there was an active resistance to it. And then there was just a passive, didn't know anything about it. Probably had heard about it once and that was it. Talk briefly about the document itself, what the document itself, does. You know, I think you said, Joanne, that it was a very comprehensive document. You know, it wasn't just a, you know, two lines, no, you can't do this, I'm the Pope, you know.
No. It you know, it lays out the groundwork of, you know, the magisterium has really taken this into consideration. We have looked at all the facts that we have at the moment and interpreting the moral law. This is what we're going to, you know, this is how we're going to advise you. And we're not just going to advise you by, you know, just as a couple. We're advising everybody, scientists, mm-hmm. because this could lead to something else. We're advising doctors and nurses who might have moral, you know, problems with this, you know, what you should do. So I thought, as you said, it's a small document and it's also very concise. Documents tend to ramble in the church and go on and on and on with what I call theospeak, but this one doesn't. This one gets right to the heart of it. Here's all our responsibilities, you know, mm-hmm. to help the couple and to help everyone understand that this is what God, you know, God gave us, you know, life. This is how we're to work with it. This is how we're to keep it alive, keep it going, keep it moving. And also, there's also a small brief paragraph on what's called Christian compassion.
Right.
You know, that if somebody is straying from this, you're not to be bitter. You're supposed to, you know, help bring them along. So I think it's again, after 50 years of just some people thinking it's a no document, they should really look at it and mm-hmm. and see that maybe this is something we could even sort of look at now and see where we come from.
Right.
Because we have to follow this, look what's happened.
Right, exactly.
We don't have a regard for life in all its forms.
Right.
Not just conception.
Right. Well, the thing I love about it is, one of those complaints you hear is, well, why does the church have anything to say about artificial birth control? After all, it's just a bunch of old celibate men. You know, why does the Pope, why does the bishop, why do the priests have something to say about it? And Paul VI addressed it right at the start. It's like the church always has the responsibility to address issues of moral and natural law. The church always has that. And that's in her competency to do. That's why she's here. That's why we have the church, to help guide us morally, to help us understand the natural law, to help understand Christ's commands. You know, that's why we have a magisterium. You know, so why do the Pope and all these old men in Rome have say on this? Because that's their job. they're kind of required to do that.
One section of it that strikes me, there's paragraph 9, which deals with married love. Mm. And it's, you know, that point 9, I think it's like maybe 5 paragraphs long, not mm-hmm. a long segment to read, but it speaks to the true friendship between spouses, and it talks about a total love, and a love that is fertile and that has at its aim, you know, bringing new life into being. And it's interesting to me when I read it now in the context of knowing, you know, my son's marriage in this last year, and the things that I was trying to share with him as they were preparing for their sacrament. You know, this is probably something that would be really lovely to copy off and give to engaged couples that you know, mm-hmm. as they prepare for their marriage sacrament, because it really is a short, you know, kind of primer on what that married love is to look like. It's really beautiful.
Yeah, very much so. And you definitely see the seeds of theology of the body in this, yep. Which of course is, I don't think is a coincidence. I wasn't able to find evidence of it, but I seem to recall hearing that Cardinal Wojtyła, later John Paul II, was an aide in producing this document. That he did have input, so maybe he wrote that section of unmarried love, because then, of course, that would lead into his thoughts on theology of the body, which he may have already had kind of in the back of his mind at that point when the document came out. The thing, you know, one thing brought up a couple of times, you know, again, I encourage people to read it. It is a short document. I read it in a half an hour this time when I did it, is what are the consequences that have followed on in the last 50 years? And I've heard people call Paul VI prophetic for this document. And I would agree with that because of his section, especially paragraph 17, where he talks about the consequences of these artificial methods of birth control. And the fact is they've come to happen. I mean, mm-hmm. I think we could argue they have absolutely come to happen, and we've gone further than he even envisioned. You know, he talks about how use of contraception can lead to marital infidelity and a general lowering of moral standards. Mm-hmm. We're definitely not more faithful in our marriages today than we were 50 years ago. Moral standards have definitely lowered in the last 50 years. Talks about how women are treated, that he says that, you know, a man who grows accustomed to the use of contraceptive methods may forget the reverence due to a woman and reduce her to being a mere instrument for the satisfaction of his own desires. I think we see that with things like pornography, with the casual attitudes towards sex, with things like, you know, dating apps that are for the express purpose of hooking up for the night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're out there.
Yeah, and then the next one, which says careful consideration should be given to the danger of this power passing into the hands of those public authorities who care little for the precepts of the moral law.
And what do we, again, we see, you know, you talk about the poor, Lisa, where if they're going to get aid from the U.S. government, for example, they, you know, their countries must accept artificial birth control.
Yeah, you know, one great blessing of having seen kind of on the front lines the work of Catholic Relief Services, to see them, you know, teaching the precepts of natural family planning in those countries, it's a really beautiful blessing. And to know how that's done. One thing that strikes me about this is, and maybe this is like my own personal longing, but for a church that doesn't just put out and reverence these documents and, you know, note the anniversary or whatever, mm-hmm. but for a church that's pastoral, for families right. living real life challenges, you know, trying to be faithful to the teachings mm-hmm. of the church, but also, you know, recognizing the pressures on today's families Well, families of any age, right. You know, what is the church doing? I see this effectively in a lot of lay ministry that's sprung up over the years, mm-hmm. Maybe for want of those things being offered in churches. But I just imagine somebody like you, Father Corey, like how can you kind of, you know, lead your flock to be faithful to this, given the pressures on you as a priest? Understaffing, right. Underfunding, you know, how we live this out as church.
Well, you know, and ironically, that's one of the things that Paul VI called pastors to do, is to encourage things like that, to work with families and to, you know, to promote, you know, obviously the teachings, but to work with families. And I'd argue that the lay movements being raised for this purpose is exactly where it should happen. You know, that, you know, lay movements are just as important aspect of the church as I as a priest and our bishops and so on. And I think they're more effective there. So I agree with you. There are some excellent lay movements, things like Retrovi, Marriage Encounter, things like that, you know, one-on-one, you know, marriage prep, things like that, that couple-to-couple marriage prep, stuff like that is excellent for this purpose. You know, and there's obviously much that I could do as well in my teaching and in my outreach to couples. But I think lay people, this is one place where they can stand up and shine. Absolutely. So, you know, when again, kind of close out here, you know, because of the sake of time, you know, there's so much more we could talk about this document, but it does have, he talks at the end of the document to all these different groups, to scientists, to public authorities, to Christian couples. There is an issue here talking about, or a section here talking about the difficulties that married couples face in their daily lives, but that, you know, encouraging them in following God and following our Lord's commands and following, you know, what that means in their sacrament of matrimony. Families and so on. So doctors and nurses, priests, bishops. So, I mean, it really is a comprehensive document. So I would encourage people to take the time to read it. It is not a hard document to read. It really isn't. And it doesn't take long to read. I pulled up a PDF, print to PDF version of it, and it was 16 large print pages. So it's not long at all. So highly encourage
and
that.
Go ahead. And people need to remember that to put it in historical context, right away in paragraph two, it says, you know, this is a response to this whole artificial contraception thing is in response to world population problem. And that was relevant in the 60s. People were worried about this. So when science comes up with an answer, now the church surprisingly quickly came up with its response as well. So they need to know the historical context of where this was as well. I think that'll help people to understand that the church actually is forward thinking and not always, you know, reacting five steps behind everyone else.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's a great point to end on. And, you know, again, encourage you to check it out and let us know what you think of the document. Obviously we want to hear your feedback on it as well. Right now, we're going to take a quick break before we go on to our second topic of discussion. I just want to thank you for listening to Let's Talk, listening to our newly revamped Let's Talk. This is one of a number of podcasts that we are in the process here at SQPN of either starting up new or revising. You know, we've got Let's Talk, which we've kind of brought from hiatus. We've got The Pilgrim Life is a new show. Deborah Shaben, I think I pronounced her name right. Sorry, Deborah, if I haven't, went on the Camino de Santiago over the summer, and now she's talking about it in her podcast about what it's like to be a pilgrim on the Camino. So I definitely encourage you check that one out. Of course, we've got our Secrets of Doctor Who with myself, Dom Bettinelli, and Jimmy Akin. We are also going to get started here pretty quick, The Secrets of Star Trek, which is another podcast that was out for a little while and then went on hiatus. Well, we're bringing that back again as Dom, Jimmy, and I. We got our Secrets of Movies and TV Shows, where we have a number of panelists come on, talk about any number of TV shows, movies, and so on. Just heard about the upcoming season of The Good Life. So, you know, we'll talk about that when that's done. The Orville and things like that. So we'll definitely discuss that. Dom has his daily StarQuest headlines, which is a, you know, 2-minute headline snippet. So please do check that out. Kind of geeky Catholic good stuff, that just short, quick headlines. So every morning you can get your headline fix. You can find all these podcasts on your favorite podcatcher, whether it's iTunes or Google Play or whatever it might be. So please do check them out. And of course, if you are on iTunes, do give us a rating. It does help when iTunes is considering which podcast to show to people as they're browsing through the podcast directory. So please do that as well. And thank you again for listening. And please do send us your feedback as well. It's feedback@sqpn.com if you wish to have feedback on any of our shows. So we're going to kind of shift notes here now. So we talked about a scandalous doc, or not scandalous, but a controversial document. And now we're going to kind of shift notes in this time of scandal and controversy and uproar in the church. It can be depressing. It can be, people can despair because of it. And we kind of lose sight that the church is full of joy. The church is full of hope. You know, my diocese right now is just finishing up its round of lawsuits and bankruptcy and all that stuff from abuse claims from, you know, years past. Other dioceses have gone through this. Other dioceses are waiting their turn. We have a prominent cardinal who I just heard today is no longer a cardinal, who was accused, rightfully accused, of acts against minors and seminarians under him, and so on. We've got all these issues. How do we find hope in that? We are to be a church of hope because we have a message of hope. How do we find hope in that? What do you think, Lisa? What do you think is a way that we can find hope in the midst of the despair of everything going on in the church today?
You know, I just go back to, this is such a hard topic, but I go back to what Jesus asked of us in the Gospels. And then I look in the world around me, in my own community, for example, at Catholic hospitals, at Catholic schools, at Catholic charities, which are out, you know, on the streets every day, meeting the homeless who are in need, ministering to refugees who are new to our area. I see the work that the church does, the institutional church in these places, and I recognize the good. And to me, that gives hope. And it also reminds me that it's not okay for me as a Catholic who feels frustrated with, you know, scandals that come up in the church to say, okay, well, that's it. You know, that's it. I'm done. I'm just going to go to brunch on Sunday instead, or I'm going to go to the beach. I'm going to find God at the beach. Yes, I can find God at the beach, but I also need the Eucharist and I need to be an active member of my church. And it's not okay for me to turn my back in times of trouble, but rather to rise up and try to be part of what the solution is to this. It's a call to personal responsibility. We're disappointed, but we're also perhaps the change that we desire. So,
what do you think, Joanne?
Well, I've been in active lay ministry for 38 years, believe it or not. The first 10 were, this didn't even exist, okay? And I remember those days fondly. But then before Boston, I was in a diocese by the name of Fall River that had its own little issue in 1990. And I have not remembered another time since. We have not been under this cloud. And I really try to remember when I minister to folks that who are frustrated by all this, by saying that our God is definitely bigger than this. And our God is going to show us how. That's all of us, the church, not just the hierarchy. We have a responsibility as well as lay people to help continue, you know, to it's such a complicated issue. believe me, and it can be frustrating, and it can make you feel like you do want to just go to the beach for Sundays. But we really, as lay folks, really need to step up and say, look, we're going to do our work. And if we hear something, we're going to have to say something. You know, it's just like anything else in this world. I think a lot of times, a lot of folks didn't want to say anything because they weren't sure if it was true. Or it was so outrageous what they heard that they couldn't believe that that could actually happen. So I think now it's like now it's not that we don't want to, you know, say everything that we hear, but I think we have to learn discernment, and we have to say, okay, maybe this is something I need to talk about with somebody in charge. And no, this is definitely not that. But I think we have a responsibility as well. And we have a responsibility to pray for our priests, because we can help pray. You know, we all are striving to be saints. We all are striving to be holy. And we may pray for ourselves, but we forget our priests sometimes because we figure, well, they're holy. They've got the sacrament. Oh, that's not just, it's something that we have to consider. We have to continue to help them with, whether it's, you know, helping them in the parish or helping just to pray for them. And I could go on for 45 more minutes, but I won't.
Yeah. No, I think that's the key thing is, first of all, we need to be a people of prayer. You know, it's difficult and we can despair, but through prayer, God can give us the grace that can help us find that hope. You know, we need, so often we really need to get back to the basics, of what it means to be a Christian. You know, to recognize that we are all sinners. We all have our sins. Some are a little more public than others. Some are, at least by human standards, more serious than others. And, you know, and then some are by God's standards more serious than others. I think we need to be clear on that as well. But we have a message of hope that we can proclaim, you know, not just in our own lives, but to those around us. We have a message of forgiveness, that when we fail, that we know that God will forgive us if we are repentant. You know, and that right there should give us hope, because I look at my own sins and shortcomings, and trust me, they're many. I don't have a halo over my head here. You know, Joanne, Lisa can confirm that. You know, they can see my video. There's no halo there. But we have hope. We have hope in a Savior. We have hope. You know, we have that who we receive in the Eucharist. The Eucharist is very much a message of hope for us, that this, our God has become one of us, died for us, and now gives us Himself, that we might join Him for eternity in heaven. We do have a lot in the church that we can be hopeful for. And yes, the hierarchy is not looking very pretty right now. You look through history, that always happens. There really aren't a lot of times when the church hierarchy is often doing the right thing, shall we say. You know, priests have failed, bishops have failed, popes have failed. You know, we think we're in scandal now. When I was at a seminary, my theology seminary in Mundelein, Illinois, we had a world history or church history professor that he relished in popping seminarians' bubbles by just reading all the different scandals and controversies in the history of the church. Because, of course,
excuse me, go ahead.
Yeah. No, it was kind of funny because seminarians would get upset, and I guess I've always been kind of more practical about it. It's like, yeah, they're sinners too. You know, the church is perfect, the church is triumphant, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, no, the church might be because it's Christ. It's the body of Christ. But we members of the body of Christ are not perfect, and there were some really imperfect members of the body of Christ. So what were you going to say, Joanne?
Yeah, this what's going on right now, we don't have the corner on scandal. If you go back in the history of the church, there have been so many different things, and the church has endured and the church has survived. And the other thing I was going to say was, you know, God has a lot of mercy. God is abundantly merciful. We as a society and we as people have seemed to have forgotten where we've kept our mercy lately. And I think we have to remember that, you know, we too are sinners before we get on any kind of social media and either say right on or, you know, or come to someone's defense. We have to remember that all of us in one way or another deserve mercy. and that it's very much in short supply right now.
Absolutely. And it's when we seek mercy from God that we will find the joy to then share that mercy. You know, I truly love the message of divine mercy. I think it's one of the most beautiful messages that we have received, of course, as a private revelation. You're not obligated to follow it, but I believe it's one of the most beautiful messages we have received in, you know, recent years, recent centuries. So
I think we have to be prepared in our own way to live that, and also for the questions that will come to us. I think of, and Joanne, maybe this is the case for you too. For a lot of people that are my friends, like, I may be the only Catholic they know. So I need to spend time in prayer before I go out into the world, knowing how I'm going to be ready to answer the questions that are going to come to me, and not, you know, fall into just bad mouthing the church. But you know, how instead I'm going to be a voice of hope. But also meeting those people who have a need in their life to know love, to know mercy, to know hope. So that is where I just find myself more often than not right now on my knees, just saying, God, help me to be ready for what I'm going to face when I go out into the world. And I'm sure, Father Corey, that you are such a beautiful witness, but you're on the front lines of this, because you go out, you know, wearing your collar, and, you know, you're a visible symbol to the world around you. So I'm praying for you.
I try to be. Sometimes that collar feels more like a leash than a, than a collar, but no, it's something I think we all need to be, though. Like you said, you know, there's a lot of us that we don't know a lot of actual Catholics, you know, people who are members of our parish, members of our diocese, and we need to be that witness for them. So that's, I think that's a good place to leave this topic off, because, you know, because we can go on to our picks of the week, you know, and talk about those things that we wanna share. So, Joanne, why don't you start us off with your pick this week?
Well, I'm going to go way out on a limb here, and my pick of the week is a current movie playing in a theater near you called Mamma Mia 2. Here we go again. And I'm sorry, if you're with all of this that's been going on, I love escapism. And that's just what I needed last week, was to go and escape. But it's interesting that this second installment of the Mamma Mia franchise happens to have a very pro-life slant to it. And I don't want to give anything away, but it again shows what life was like in the 70s, and, you know, what choices were made. And I think it's all, you know, other than the ABBA music that everybody seems to love and sing along to, and they were singing along in the theater I was in, even though these songs are a little bit more obscure. If you're looking for escapism that isn't too heavy and is familiar, and if you like the first one, then I would go with Mamma Mia 2.
Excellent. Excellent. Sounds like, I haven't seen the first one, but definitely worth seeing both of them, it sounds like.
Oh, then watch the first one. You do watch the first one so that you understand the second. And some people have said that Cher as a grandmother is the price of admission for this particular movie.
Very good. Well, do you have one for us, Lisa?
Yeah, can I have two?
Sure,
if I'd be really quick. Okay, so the first is really relevant to our conversation today, and that's the work of Couple to Couple League. You can find them at ccli.org. Not only very practical, but also a community to help you live, you know, the teachings of Humana Vitae. So ccli.org, they're awesome, Couple to Couple League. And then I have to put in a plug for my son's band, The Fire, Scottish band, and their YouTube channel. My son Adam is in a trio that plays traditional Scottish music. And if you go over to YouTube and check out Fire Scottish Band, you can see one of their most recent videos, which was shot atop Denali in Alaska. Oh, wow. And it's a tune that they play up on the top of this amazing mountain in Alaska. And it just is amazing. So check it out, Fire Scottish Band.
Oh, man.
I saw that, Lisa. It's wonderful. It's a great video.
I'll have to go check that out. That sounds awesome. That sounds incredible. I'm sure the scenery is just insanely beautiful.
Yeah, and imagine playing bagpipes up there.
Yeah, you need a lot of air to play bagpipes, and there's not a lot of air up there, so that would be interesting. Well, very good. Well,
what's yours?
Well, my pick of the week is one that actually is relevant for our podcast because it's Google's new podcast app. So for a couple of years now, Google has had podcast capability in their Google Play app and website. It's been a little clunky. Podcasts were kind of like a subnote on a sidebar somewhere. You had to kind of dig around. You had to look for it a little bit, especially on the website. It was even harder to find there. But now they've released a podcast app about a month or so ago. Much nicer. It's a dedicated podcast app. You pull it up. It's got a kind of tiles at the top with all your different podcasts you're subscribed to. It's a little bar here, new episodes, what's in progress, what's downloading, recommendations. Google is very good at recommendations. That's kind of what they've built their whole system on, their network on. And of course, you subscribe to podcasts, you can play them, you can do quick time, speed them up, slow them down. The only complaint I have with Google Podcasts is it does not yet do the Chromecast, where you can send it to a TV, you can send it, I've got the Google Home. Can't do that yet. I'm sure that's coming. I'm kind of surprised Google released it without that, but I'm sure they figured it was better to get it out than to focus on that. I've been doing more exercise lately, spending at least a half an hour a day exercising 5 days a week. And it's great to have a podcast on my earbuds and just kind of walk or run and listen. You can find all our SQPN podcasts there. So if you search for SQPN in it, you'll find, Let's Talk and Secrets of Doctor Who and movies and TV and so on. So you can definitely subscribe to all those there as well. So it's a great little podcast app, and I'm sure it's going to get better as they because Google really does want to promote podcasts. I think they recognize that it's an important thing for them to promote. So I definitely encourage Android users. Of course, it is Android. I don't know if it's iOS or not.
No, it's not. I just looked. It's not there yet.
It figures that it wouldn't be because, of course, iOS has the iTunes podcast app, which is good as well. So that actually makes a lot of sense that they wouldn't release it. This is the competitor. And, I haven't used much of the iOS one, but I think this is a very well done podcast app.
So the iOS one is being revamped with iOS 12.
Sure.
So I think that's why Google is getting out ahead of all this.
Exactly.
Sounds like it.
Exactly. Well, it's. I know the iOS one has been revamped once before because previously it looked like a old tape deck, which kind of looked cool, but yes, was pretty impractical. So,
yeah.
No, this is definitely an improvement for podcasts on Android phones, which has lagged a little bit behind iOS.
Oh, Father Corey, one other thing I wanted to mention, because you said this during the break. If you get Dom's daily update, if you own, I'm going to say her name, Alexa, in your home, you can actually add Dom's podcast, the SQPN Highlights, to your daily briefing, your morning briefing. So I have that nestled in there, and it's an awesome way to get that content.
Excellent. Can't do that yet with Google. There's a reason why I haven't said the words okay or hey and Google in the same sentence, because you'll get a beep. You can do a morning briefing on it. You just can't add them yet. I'm hoping that's one thing Google adds sometime in the near future, because that would be nice. That is a nice feature to have, where you can, here's your latest news. Here's your, SQPN headlines for the day, et cetera, et cetera. So that's great. That's good to know. Well, thank you both for joining us. This has been a great discussion. I hope it's led people to think about these issues a little bit. Lisa, where can people find you?
On social media at Lisa Hendy, which is LisaHendey. And my website is lisahendy.com.
Excellent. And of course, you can find all our books and writings all over the place, I'm sure. Your great Catholic bookstores should have her books or can get her books. So,
and for our listeners in Australia, I'm coming to you next month. I'll be in Australia for 2 weeks in August.
Oh, I'm jealous.
So excited.
I'm jealous.
Yeah.
That'll be fun. Although I don't know if this is the greatest time to visit
Australia.
It's gonna be awesome. It's kind of winter down there.
I know. That's okay. I'll go anytime to Australia.
Awesome. So. How about you, Joanne? Where can people find you?
Oh, if you're looking for me, I guess, usually cranberrycatholic.org, that's our website. You find me anywhere floating around there. And also, if we ever get it back on, and this is not an SQPN podcast, but it's MondayMorningCatholic.net. I've had that one around for a while, but again, we're on hiatus because it's just hard for all of us who were involved. We're also all ministers in the church, so it's kind of hard to get people together, as you know, Father Corey.
Oh,
So,
yes.
but if anybody wants me, I'm also at Joanne Mercier at cranberrycatholic.org if you want to email me just to say hi.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, and again, I'm Father Corey Stika. You can find me, my website where I post my homilies, which is I also have set up as a podcast, is frcorey.org. That's FRCORY.org. You can find me on Facebook at Father spelled out Corey Stika, last name spelled Stica. That's usually the place I hang out. I do have a Twitter, FR Corey Stika, but I don't often go there because Twitter has become kind of a cesspool, in my opinion. I'm sorry to say. But I do pop
Yeah,
up there
right.
occasionally. But thank you again for joining us. I hope you'll join us next week again for Let's Talk. God bless.